Dog Works Radio Network presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Mushing Radio and Robert Forto from KVRF 89.7 in the Matsu Valley. RadioFreePalmer.org is our live streaming site, and you can find us on the app. Just search for KVRF as well. I am joined by our co-host here on Mushing Radio, calling in from sunny California, I assume. It's Alex Stein. Alex, how's it going?
It's going great, Robert, and I think we are significantly warmer here than you are up there. I keep seeing on Facebook about the big, deep freeze that a lot of Alaska is in with temperatures of 30, 40, 50, 60 below zero.
Yeah, I woke up this morning at minus 32. That's as cold as I've seen it at my house. I've been out on the trail where it's been considerably colder, but it's a little chilly to wake up at 32 below zero.
Yeah, it's when you start getting to between 30 and 40 below, that's when it literally can start hurting to breathe.
Right.
So if you're outside for too long, it's a very potentially dangerous situation, especially if you're not, you know, making sure that all of your skin is covered and all of that.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? A lot of people ask, how in the world can the dogs handle that? And when we went out and fed this morning, they all jumped out of their houses when we brought the buckets down, and they were running around and barking and carrying on. I don't think it fazed them a bit.
No, they are, we've talked a lot about temperatures in terms of what the ideal temperatures is for dogs. And although it seems hard for, you know, us who are used to it being considerably warmer, when it's about 10, 20 degrees below zero, that's a really good temperature for these sled dogs.
Yes, it is. So, Alex, we are doing a live show, the first time in a long time that we have been live on the air. I'm pretty excited for that. But we are going to talk a little bit about the absolutely fabulous race this past weekend with the Copper Basin. And then we're going to jump into where we left off on our last show and cover the rookie lineup in the 2017. I'm a year ahead of myself. 2017 Iditarod, is that right?
Yes, and the Copper Basin was absolutely a really, really great race this year. And one of the things that I was very excited about was that, and correct me if I'm wrong, this is the first major mid-distance race, at least that I'm aware of, where this has happened. The top three spots were all women. So Ryan Olson won, and then Paige Drobny and Michelle Phillips in number two and three. And then Allie Zirkel was number six. So four of the top six finishers were women.
You know, that's pretty dang impressive. I don't think that that's happened in a very long time. And we've talked about all of those ladies before. And I think I mentioned early in the season about Ryan Olson is one of my picks for a really good up-and-coming woman musher. And I look for her to do very well throughout the rest of the season, and possibly Iditarod as well.
Yeah, and I believe she's running the Quest this year, and she should do very well in the Quest. Michelle Phillips is an Iditarod musher that has been really a very solid up and coming musher for the past 4 or 5 years. So I would look for her to do very well as well. And of course, Allie Zirkel is Allie Zirkel. So I keep hoping that that this will be the year that she will win and not come in second again.
Right. And you know, speaking of the Copper Basin, I guess it was one heck of a trail out there. Some big name mushers ended up scratching. I know Sebastian Cianulli had scratched. Vern Halter, who usually does very well, scratched, as well as his kennel partner or racing partner, Cindy Abbott. There was quite a list of folks that had real trouble out there on the trail with broken sleds and all that.
Yeah, and, you know, we've been used to, in the past few years, having just winters that have not had a lot of snow and have, you know, been very, very warm. So it's starting to look like, you know, and I don't want to jinx anything, but it's starting to look like that will not be so much the problem this year. Sebastian Schnulli, as you mentioned, dropped out, scratched from Copper Basin. He also decided to drop out of Iditarod for this year. He had had, as many of our listeners may know, he had an accident with his dog team, was crossing a road and was several of his, the members of his team were hit by a car. I believe he lost at least one dog, possibly two or three. And he said that because of the state of the team, he just wasn't able to field an Iditarod team this year. And we've discussed in the past that there is, you know, it's very important to have the right lead dog, but the balance of dogs that you have and the personalities and the way they interact in a dog team is really kind of more art than science, but it's a very precarious balance. And if you have one or two dogs that are not available, it can throw that entire balance and the entire team off.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, we've compared, you know, mushing to other sports on many occasions, and we've often compared it to the NFL. And I don't think guys like Tom Brady would be near as proficient as he is if he didn't have that very well-balanced team behind him, not only the offensive line, but also the receivers and running backs and coach and everything else. And I think a lot of that can be parlayed back to mushing with the other members of the team.
Absolutely. And I know that Sebastian has long been a fan favorite, and a lot of us were looking forward to seeing him back behind the runners this year. He had been doing commentary for Iditarod.com following the race on the snow machine. I have not heard yet if he's going to do that or what exactly his plans are, but we do know that he's pulled out of Iditarod.
Well, I wish him luck. I wish all the folks that ended up scratching for one reason or another that all of their dogs are well. It sounds like all of them are. Most of them were equipment issues more than anything. I guess it was a heck of a trail out there. So I wish everybody well, and congrats to Ryan Olson and all those other tenacious women out there that just pulled this together and did so well on what they call one of the toughest races in Alaska.
Yes, absolutely. And just people who follow me on Facebook may have seen I posted what was, of course, a typo. After Alan Moore had come in, he was listed as finishing with 31 dogs.
Right.
Which, you know, they start with 12, so it was reasonably clear that was a typo, but it was just an amusing typo.
So this coming weekend, here in just a few days, is the Cusco 300. They're saying that is the largest purse that they've ever had. It's always been a very well-paid race. A lot of the big names are out there, Hugh Neff and the Mackeys, the Mackey brother and, you know, Lance's brother Jason and his son, as well as Jeff King and several others are out that way. So that's the race to watch this weekend. And then coming up after that is the Northern Lights 300, and then very soon after that is the Yukon Quest. So, Alex, since we are live, we can't go over today, so let's jump into this. We're going to talk about the rookies in this year's race. On our last episode, we talked about all of the veterans, but we have several rookies and a lot of names you haven't heard before from very interesting places. And the first one on the list is Roger Lee from England, and the second one is Nicholas Vanier, I believe is how you pronounce that, from Paris, France. Pretty interesting there.
Yeah, Roger Lee is listed as from England. I'm not exactly sure how Iditarod decides where to list people's hometown. He had American parents, and he was raised in England. Joined the Air National Guard and met Didi Genro at a dog care presentation and decided that he wanted to start racing dogs. He's in the Air Force, and he's taking a year off so that he could train and run Iditarod, which I think is very, very cool. He's working with Scott Jansen's team, the Mushing Mortician.
Right.
And I have to tell you, Scott has become kind of a powerhouse in the mushing world, and especially in the Iditarod world, coming from, you know, getting his own team together, I guess about 6 years ago, 6 or 7 years ago, to now having several teams that are running Iditarod.
Yeah, he, speaking of the Mushing Mortician there, yes, he is a funeral director, a pretty large business presence up here in Alaska, and he just recently converted a pretty large church up here in the Wasilla area. And behind this church, they built a very large building. And I remember reading on Facebook or something about a year ago, he went out and purchased a semi truck, you know, the cab. And he is doing all sorts of things with that, hauling up meat and supplies for the sled dogs and just doing all sorts of things that somebody that's not typically this new, and you said 6 years or so in mushing, is usually full feet involved like he is. So I think he's doing an excellent job with what he's trying to do with his kennel.
Absolutely. And you know, we talk a lot about, when we talk about rookies, that a lot of rookies come up either working for one of the larger teams or handling for one of the larger teams and then running one of the puppy teams. And I, you know, if you'd asked me 6 years ago if I expected that Scott Jansen would be doing this and would have this many dogs and have this many teams and be just so prominent in the sport, I don't think I would have guessed that.
You know, I wouldn't have either. So, we're wishing Scott and his teams the best. So the next one on the list, a rookie from Minnesota, is Ryan Anderson. And then we have Thomas Rosenblum from Cantwell. I assume he's working with probably Mike Santos's kennel up there.
Yeah,
and then we have
Mike Santos.
Misha, I'm not sure how to pronounce her last name, from Prague, Czech Republic. But what's interesting about Misha is she lives right here in Willow, and she has run the Quest a couple of times, but she is one of the ladies that works at our post office. So I know Misha a little bit, and it's interesting to always put faces to the names. And when you go collect your mail here in our little community, that's typically who you're dealing with at the counter.
Yeah, and it's exciting for me as a fan to see people from different parts of the world come to Alaska and race Iditarod. And, you know, certainly seeing someone from the Czech Republic come is very exciting. The next person on the list is Otto, I believe his name is pronounced Bailoff, who is the first Hungarian who is going to compete in Iditarod. And he has trained with and worked for Dallas Seavey, run the qualifiers with Dallas's puppy team, and I believe he's running a Dallas Seavey team this year in Iditarod.
The next one on the list is Sebastian Verengold, I believe is how you pronounce that one, also from France. And then we're skipping on down to Laura Nice, and I would imagine you have something to say about Laura. But beforehand, you know, when folks have been to the ceremonial or the restart, where I'm sure I've seen it on Iditarod Insider, they see there at the top, they have all of the flags that are representing the countries. And in years past, they've had Japan and Jamaica and all sorts of things. But it's going to have an interesting mix up there this year, isn't it, Alex, with some new countries being represented, at least from, you know, the most recent history. I don't think we've had a Hungarian or, you know, some of these other newer countries in quite a while, have we?
No, and it is exciting, and it does, you know, speak towards how Iditarod is really very much a sport with a global footprint.
Right.
Laura Nice, I just wanted to mention, is 20 years old, so she is, I believe, going to be the youngest person running this year. She lives in Michigan, where she has her own kennel. She ran the Yukon Quest last year at the age of 19, and has run a bunch of qualifiers and a bunch of races in the lower 48. So it's very exciting for me to see people who are really in that next up and coming generation. And there are a few rookies who are in their 20s racing this year. So those are people that hopefully we will be seeing a lot more of in the years to come.
You know, if I'm not mistaken, and I'm sure one of our listeners will correct us, but I believe that Laura is doing both the Quest and the Iditarod this year, which is not a feat that many try to tackle, is it?
No, not at all. And especially, especially when you're only 20. I mean, when I was 20, I certainly couldn't have handled a 200-mile race, let alone 2,000-mile races.
So the next one on the list is Joe Carson. He is listed from McGrath, Alaska. And a little story about Joe. There is a company that he operates, a bee company, where they sell pollen supplements. And being a beekeeper myself, I know a lot of folks are sort of on Joe's sponsorship list. I know that Justin Savatas and Rick Casillo and all sorts of other big-name folks are using some type of pollen supplement for their dogs, and I know that that's Joe's business. Do you know anything else about him?
Other than the health food supplements, not very much. He's a doctor and has been around dog racing and around mushing for many years. It's exciting to see people who are coming at the sport from slightly different angles, and certainly someone who's coming at it from a scientific angle and from an angle of looking at developing new natural foods and natural supplements for the dogs is something that's a little bit unusual.
So next on the list is Jimmy Lebling. He's also listed here from Willow, Alaska. Then following down quite a ways is Peter Reuter, I believe is how you would say his name. Maybe it's Reuter. And he is from Bloomingdale, New York.
Yeah, he has. He's been in Alaska since 2012, has worked with the CV's Iditarod organization in Girdwood, giving tours, and is racing with Dean Osmar's dogs this year.
Wow, interesting. When you hear Dean Osmar, that's a name that's been kicked around quite a bit in Iditarod history. I know when we covered the mushing history through the decades, that name was one that came up quite often. The next one on the list is Dave Delacorte. He is listed from Wasilla, Alaska. And then we have Justin High. I believe that is a previous kennel handler for DD Genre, is that right?
Yes, I believe so.
And Justin is one of the folks that lost their home in the Sockeye fire. They live very close to DD when that fire took place, and they lost their home during that terrible fire. So it looks like he has made a comeback and is doing well and going to be on the Iditarod Trail for the first time coming up here in a couple of months.
Yes, and does that bring us to Robert Reddington, or did I miss someone?
Let's see. No, that the next one would be Justin Strelstra, I believe is how you say his name. I know his dad is a musher, and we talked about these two guys last show.
Right, and he is running with dogs from the Turning Heads Kennel, which is Travis Beal and Sarah Stokey's kennel.
Right. So yeah, it looks interesting that there will be I believe his dad is racing this year. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, I believe so.
So the next one on the list is Robert Reddington, who he had mentioned. When you say that name, of course, it's synonymous with Iditarod. What do you know about Robert? Well, I know we've talked a lot about Ray and Ryan over the years, and of course, Joe Reddington being sort of the founder of the race. What do you know about this young man?
So he is 28. He's the grandson of Joe Reddington, brother of Ryan and Ray. This is his first year running with his own dogs. He entered in 2016, but he ended up scratching. So still technically by Iditarod rules, a rookie until you finish the race. I have to think that if you are in Alaska and you have the last name of Reddington, sooner or later you have to think, okay, this is the year I'm just going to run the Iditarod.
It seems that you would have big shoes to fill for sure. And I know that we've talked a lot about the CVs over the years and the youngest generation of CVs with Conway CV has, I think he won Junior Iditarod a time or two. And he's one of the few that said, you know what, guys, I'm not interested in running Iditarod. I'm interested in doing other things. And he's a pretty popular musician around here. I know he plays a lot of festivals here in Alaska, and it's pretty interesting that just because you come from a big mushing family does not necessarily mean you're going to be out there on the Iditarod Trail.
Right, or at least not every year.
Right,
you know,
right.
I think it's something that being a CV or being a Reddington, I think you have to at least try it. But yeah, as you said, Conway is sort of an up-and-coming Alaskan singer, songwriter, music star.
All right, next on our list is Michael Baker from Willow, and then we have Paul Hansen from Kotzebue, and then following down the list here, that is it. So Paul is the last one. You know what's interesting, Alex? My wife and I, when we're driving down the roads, she always says to me as the dog trucks drive by, hey, who is that? Who is that? And now that I look, and all of these rookies, in particular from, you know, the Matsu Valley, Willow, Wasilla, Big Lake area, now I know why there's so many dog trucks that I don't know or I'm not familiar with, because all these new folks are moving up here and getting in the Iditarod game.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Michael Baker's is working with Matthew Failer's team. Paul Hansen, as you mentioned, is from Kotzebue. He has a very small kennel, and he's run races like the Kovac 440 and the Nome to Council races, and this is his first time running Iditarod. But as you mentioned, there's just a lot of teams, a lot of people who go up to the Willow area because it's, I guess, relatively easy to get a place that is near the trail system, and you can just have your dog yard and you know, get your dogs in harness and go right out from your backyard, pretty much.
Yeah, you can, and we have absolutely fabulous trails on both sides of the Parks Highway, hundreds of miles of trails. And like you mentioned, you know, not only is property relatively cheap compared to other parts of Alaska, but we are in a very unique position where we almost always have snow, whereas a little bit south of us, typically it is here and gone. And then, of course, as you drive north, there's always other things that are involved for folks that are working mushers who have jobs. If they live, let's say, north of Talkeetna, it's very difficult to commute down into Anchorage or the Matsu, and then anywhere between Talkeetna and Fairbanks, which is about 250 miles or so, there's not a lot of places for jobs up that way. And then, of course, you have a bunch of mushers that live around Fairbanks, Two Rivers, North Pole area. So we're sort of the hub of the mushing community up there in Willow.
Right, and it's close enough to Anchorage that you can commute if you do have a job, if you have a job that requires you to go to Anchorage every day. So it's not, it's a bit of a drive, but it's not an impossible drive. And also the in addition to the snow, there's kind of a culture there of having dog teams around.
Right.
If you're too close to a city, you know, and you have 50 or 60 dogs, people do not like that. But out in Willow, I think it's assumed that people will have a lot of dogs.
Well, I do believe, Alex, that there are far more dogs in the community of Willow than there are people. It's a huge community, well over 30 miles in length along the Parks Highway, and then sort of branches off, you know, into the back roads there. And we have anywhere from 2,000 to 2,500 people, and most of those folks are not yearly residents. We have a lot of residents that come up that have, you know, summer cabins that stay part of the year, then live in the city the rest. So it's a very interesting community. I know you visited it several times with coming up for Iditarod, and you've also been up to our place and sort of seen what they call the mushing capital of the world.
Yeah, and you know, there's something very exciting about being around that many dogs. And I've always found that when I go somewhere where people have a dog yard and where they have a lot of dogs, and there's an excitement when you get into the dog yard and the dogs all notice you and they all start communicating and barking and howling. And for someone who is a fan of dog sports, that's just a very exciting thing.
It is, you know, and they truly are excited. And they're typically relatively calm the rest of the time, with the exception of when it's feeding time and when it's time to hook up. So they're not barking all the time, which would just drive our non-dog owners batty. But they do start up a chorus, and they'll keep it going for quite a while, especially if they're excited.
Yeah, and there's a very active, I forget what it's called, but there's a very active Willow Mushing Association there as well. Is that
yes.
right?
Yeah, the Willow Dog Musters Association. You know, in the past, they haven't really done a lot of races, but now they're getting a little bit more involved. They're going to do the Willow 300 coming up in a couple of weeks. And just this past weekend, they're doing a sort of a series of junior mushing races here in Willow that's put on by the Dog Mushers Association. It's going to be over the next 3 weeks, and kids with one dog, two dog, three dogs, and up can get their feet wet in mushing. And I think that is very important for our community, is to get these youngsters out on the trails and get them used to running dogs again.
Yeah, and you know, we hear stories all the time, like the story about Roger Lee meeting Didi Genro and becoming inspired and involved with mushing as a result of that. And casual fans may not realize it, but when people come up to Alaska and when they meet mushers and when they, you know, see demonstrations of dogs or get to go on a short ride or something like that, that's part of what really gets people, you know, inspired and gives them the bug that they want to go and do this. And, you know, as we've talked about many times, it takes a while for that to happen. But almost everyone, you talk to them and they can cite one instance, which is really where they started on this road that leads them, you know, hopefully to Iditarod and to crossing the finish line in Nome.
Well, speaking of that, Alex, you've got your feet wet a few times. When are you going to come up here and get on a sled and maybe see your name on this list in the next 10 or 15 years?
I'm going to have to say soon.
Very good. Well, you're always welcome at our place for sure. We have less than a minute here. Do you have any idea for next week's topic?
I do not at the moment. But I'm sure we will come up with something. And as usual, if anyone has suggestions, corrections, thoughts, hit us up on social media, on Facebook, on Twitter. I am at Coldfoot Films, and you are at Robert Forto. And always love to hear from our listeners.
Yes, for sure. So, Alex, we will see you next time here on Mushing Radio. Make sure you follow us along. Talk to you soon. Goodbye.